From the great halls of their house, there are assembled three who hope to one day be the world's greatest driving heroes. Created from the cosmic legends of the universe comes our team captain, the Vision, Bill Fisher. Their soon-to-be Wonder Woman, Vicky Fisher. Our Captain Marvel and head flight trainee, Jennifer Scripchuk. And our Batman, the master of tools, gadgets, and all things mechanical, our mild-mannered soon-to-be billionaire, Alan Danvers. Their mission, to fight injustice, share what is right and wrong, to get you out of your house and come out racing with them, and serve all mankind. They are the Garage Heroes in Training Team.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
Miss Vicky.
Yes, sir.
You know what?
What?
You know, I've been thinking about this Sentinel system.
Yeah? Tell me about the Sentinel system.
So what I was thinking was, we have the one car that's got the aim dash that's slowing us down. Because installing the aim dash is actually, it probably is easy, but it's quite hard the first time. And we haven't figured that out yet. The Sentinel system is really easy to set up. So what I was thinking was, why don't we put it in the Lemon's car? And we'll worry about the aim data information separately. And we'll kind of break it down into a project. Because then we'd have the motorsports video system that we really, really want. And we'd be able to stream it. We just won't have the data inside. But we have the data outside, so we can combine them later. But I think that's a really good solution.
So what does this Sentinel system do?
Well, if it had the aim data, it would have all the data on the screen and you could see all their telemetry and everything live. But we'd be able to not only record it for viewing after the race, but we could actually watch our car during the race.
Ooh, like on the monitor and everything?
On a monitor. If you were at home and I was at a track, or if you were at the track and I was at home, you know, depends on who gets the short straw, but we'd be able to watch each other.
You know, it's something I've always wanted to do.
And you know what? If you're driving, you know what you can do on the aim, on the Sentinel system?
What's that?
You can communicate to me with your hands and I can't do a thing about it.
Even better.
So, you know, if you need to give a wave or a jersey wave, whatever you need, we could save it and see it on the screen. And then you can have up to three different cameras and it'll have picture in picture. You'll have the basic main shot out the front window and then two cameras where you put them wherever you want. One could be on the driver or one could be on the rear view. It's kind of cool.
Then we can upload it onto YouTube.
We could. We could bore millions of people on YouTube.
I love it.
All right. Very well. You know what the only downside I see about this?
What?
Your mom and my mom are going to be panic stricken the entire weekend watching this thing to see if everything's going well.
This is true.
We probably shouldn't tell them.
I like the idea of having a Sentinel.
Mm-hmm. Well, luckily we have maybe two. Depends on how things go. We're going to try. All right. That sounds like a plan. That's the project. We got to get that ready for the next race.
Sounds great.
All right. Very well. Thank you, ma'am. Ben Dawson.
Yes.
And Miss Vicky.
Ben.
And
I love talking to Ben.
Love talking to you guys.
It's awesome.
You know, we were talking before you came on. Ben's been replaced with ChatGPT.
Yeah, we're trying to definitely replace you with AI as quickly as possible.
Oh, gosh.
I've been striking so that I can get replaced. That's why you haven't heard from me for a minute.
We got a better chance at meeting Ben ChatGPT than we do at meeting Ben Dawson.
No kidding. Damn. We almost had a couple of chances this summer, but they fell apart for many different reasons.
I know.
On both ends.
The big tease. It's okay. So, Ben, we had a listener write in and they had a question. And then,
fantastic.
You know, I kind of morphed it a little bit. So I made it even a bigger question. So this might take a few minutes. But,
okay.
They were trying to find out what car they needed to get for track day cars, track cars. And they were like trying to figure out, you know, front wheel drive, rear wheel drive, horsepower,
right.
You know, all kinds of things. And I thought, there's a difference between what you need that first day going on track,
right,
and what you need to work your way through.
There is one answer that will take you all the way through the entire progression from your daily driver to
there is a race car. And it's not made by McLaren.
It's not. Yeah.
It's not made by Lotus. Although I would love to get a Lotus, that would be quite fun.
Cool. You say that.
See, I like mid engine cars. I had a good.
They look cool. I don't know if the execution or the real life experience is worth the thing.
So Ben. Mm-hmm. First day or something that will grow with you from start to finish. What are you thinking? Let's go with characteristics and then we can go with suggestions.
Yeah. I mean, the very first thing that popped into my mind, because of course there's no right answer for this, but one of the first things that popped into my mind is just the joy I see with drivers who are relatively new to track events. Let's just use DEs as an example, but you know, I get most excited when I see somebody there with a car that you can tell is a car they're enthusiastic about owning and finally getting to the track. A lot of times it's a big mountaintop experience for somebody to finally get whatever car they've been working with to the track. So if it's one of those kind of folks, you know, I say a perfect car is whatever car you've been dreaming of getting to the track and you finally got to the track. You know, I will never poo-poo anything somebody else brings to the track.
Right.
So it depends on what your priorities are. If your priority is, this is my dream car, I've always wanted to have one, plus bring it to the track, you know, whether that's a De Tomaso Pantera or a Miata or a little BMW 3 Series. You know, those are the kind of extremes. You know, something kind of wacky and one-off or very rare versus something very common and very easily tunable and workable at the track, like a little BMW or a little Mazda can be.
Okay.
It depends on what's bringing you to the track. Are you there to just to learn some better driving habits? Do you need a whole separate car for doing track events? Is the car you've got good enough to at least do a couple track events? Yes. Unless it's a very top heavy truck, the car you have is fine. If you just want to kind of test the waters and do a couple things. So I think there are plenty of considerations. First one being like, do I need a separate vehicle for this or not? And if you do, then you start getting the considerations of what things are important to you as an automotive enthusiast, as a person who has a wallet. You know, I mean, certainly my budget for how much fun I can have at the track is always being dictated by my wallet, which is always does not have much dollars in it. So, you know what I mean? I would love to be out there racing a full board GT1 car at the highest levels of SECA, but I'm never going to be able to afford that. I can't even really afford to race. I can't afford the tires to race in spec Miata and competitively at a national level. You know what I mean? I can put that by myself. So I think a lot of anybody's decision is going to come down to whether you want to or not. It's going to be dictated by your budget.
For sure. And that's a big part of this thing. So I guess somebody was looking for advice. Let's say a friend of yours says, hey, I've got some money that I want to do this. I want to go. And what should I look for? And what should I look out for?
Man, how do you feel about buying cars that other people have already done some prep to or like halfway built into a race car? Would you rather start your own from scratch, or do you mind if it's if it's somebody who's got a fairly okay reputation in the community, for example, maybe not just some dude off of eBay or Craigslist or something, but maybe somebody who's got a fairly well known name? Do you mind picking up a build part right there? I mean, I think that's not new to you guys, right? You've been there.
No, we've done it. I think that the advantage is you're going to save a little bit of money. The disadvantage is you're going to have to figure out what they did.
The disadvantage might be you get a camera and a mirror and you take a picture around the far side of that roll cage weld that you didn't check when you bought it. And suddenly you realize it's only welded, you know, or it's only welded halfway around, or it's got a cut halfway through. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You never know what you're
talking about. Might have to do some cleanup work.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, but you know,
never assume that it's good.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you got to go through it, even if it's somebody, you know, that you're friends with, you know, it's, the more we know and the more we get into this, the more we find out that we have certain ways that we like certain things and everybody likes things their way. So you may like let's do something simple, like a pull up harness and we like a pull down harness or vice versa, you know, and you may end up changing it. So it's not a no, do not try and run away, but it's also not, you know, if it says track ready, just put gas in it and take it to the track, I'm not believing that either.
Yeah. The thing is with that scenario is that regardless, you are going to have to bring this car in, go over it, and you don't know what the usage is on the parts that are already on the car. And right. my habit now has become to go in there and just replace those consumables, so at least you know that you have a starting point.
Gotcha. I think that's good advice. I think if somebody was looking to get into track stuff, said, you know, hey, I got a fairly okay budget for doing this. I'm pretty sure I want to get into this, you know, long term, but I want to do it safely. I mean, you really couldn't beat like getting into this and buying somebody's club racing car, like a mid-pack regional spec Miata or a local spec E30 car that's been passed SCCA tech or NASA tech as far as safety tech on the vehicle, and it's a proven quantity, and it's been out there. You can never tell how much metal fatigue a chassis has or something like that, but ultimately you kind of just have to take some of those things as chances. But you could buy a fully prepped car and something low power and lightweight. It's also going to force you to have to be a good driver. I mean, you can't be a slouch of a driver in a spec E30 or a spec Miata. Like, there's no power to rescue you, so you got to learn to carry low speed, and you got to learn how to not sacrifice space. So I mean, I would say that would be my advice to somebody who had a little bit of a budget to spend and didn't mind driving a race car to the track every once in a while, or I think you can still probably put a license plate on a lot of this stuff and drive it if you had to. But otherwise, you can get into something that you can that has good potential to build and has a robust aftermarket for hot rod parts. You know, whether it's something that building for the spec class, like a spec E46 or a spec Miata, or just getting a car that's like an E46 or an old E36 BMW or the BRZ. What's the other one? FRS.
That 86. Chassis.
Yeah, the 86 chassis. I'm starting to see a lot of those at the track, and even starting to see some in endurance races. So I would think that that's also got a pretty healthy aftermarket for, legit speed parts, not like AutoZone stick-on portholes or anything, or dinky wings. But I mean, I'm sure there's some really nice stuff you can get from those cars too. But you don't have to necessarily think, oh, I'd like to go to the track, and how am I ever going to afford, a Porsche 911? There's plenty of cheaper options out there, even though that might be what pops into a lot of people's head when they think about a track event. But you can do it in everything from your daily Honda, which you kind of mod up to end up as a Honda Challenge race car by the time you're ready to take it off the road. I used to daily drive my Miata until it already had a race seat and a 4-point bar in it, and I was daily driving that thing. It was miserable, but I wanted to also be able to take it to the track and be safe. So it just depends on how committed you are to what you're doing, how much your budget is too. What are your concerns? What would you think? What would you recommend, Bill?
Well, I think the big ones are what you said. You want to get a car that you like. So the front wheel drive, rear wheel drive is often decided by what you're into. Like if you're into the Japanese tuner market, you're probably going to want a front wheel drive. If you're into the European sports car market, you're probably going to want a rear wheel drive. If you're into the muscle cars, you're definitely going to want a rear wheel drive. But I think the budget part is often neglects to take into account two things that people don't put in their budget, and that's the consumables and driver education practice.
And style of car, which is going to be the price of the parts.
Yep. Didn't get there yet.
Yeah. In my instance, if you're starting out and you have a little bit of money to do this, I would definitely go into something that is a common car, something like maybe a Honda or something. The parts are cheap. They're abundant.
Yes, that affects the price, right? Like the more
certainly does.
Abundant and common parts are. Porsche parts will blow your mind.
You flip over, somebody gives you a cheap. Right, you go ahead and somebody gets you like a cheap Porsche. You're like, yeah, this is great. I got it at a good price, but you're going to pay for it in the end, just trying to keep the thing running. And BMWs to a certain extent can be a little bit of pricey. Anything that you get that is a foreign build, you're going to be paying more for. So
in my experience, though, just to say, BMW and Mazda parts are fairly comparable, at least in my mind, about the stuff that you're frequently replacing. I've heard that Porsche is worse than BMW. Just in case somebody's listening, trying to straddle that German fence of which way to go, is still be relatively easy on your wallet. If you're doing all the work yourself with the BMW, you know, you can buy the cheapest rotors you can find from the track, and that's always okay. The cheapest steel rotors you can find, just kind of expect to go through them. And but a lot of, like, you know, I think Porsche stuff's just a little more expensive than on the everyday consumable stuff like rotors. But I'm not 100% sure, but yeah. I definitely would choose a BMW because they're also pretty easy to work on. Anyway, getting off track a little bit, I'm not sure what I would pick if I was just getting into the sport right now. That's a tough call because I already know too much.
Yeah. You know what? Getting into is that I wouldn't have your first car if you're getting into it. I wouldn't have your first car getting out there be anything super expensive, because there is a likelihood that you are going to crash in your learning process. So don't go out.
You also don't really know what you like on track yet.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to spend a ton of money.
Yeah, don't spend a ton of money in your first. I mean, work up to knowledge, and then, you know, you're going to end up coming to this point when you're going to be selling and reselling and selling and reselling. You know,
I'll tell you what, though, go to a track day out in NorCal. You go to a track day out in like the San Francisco area. You would not believe what people rolled up to the novice class with, like, that McLaren, that Ferrari, that's some kind of Ferrari. We're like, you're in the novice class. Not everybody takes this advice, but it's very smart advice, Mickey.
Well, you know what? You never know. You never really focus on the walls until you hit them. So you got to be careful, you know. So that's what I'm saying is, I mean, going out there, just keep that in mind.
You know? So is it our official stance that you don't want to track or race anything that you can't afford to just walk away from and go, all right.
Absolutely. For me,
ideally.
Yeah.
That's the show's official stance.
You won't push the car if you need to drive that car home or drive it to work the next week and your budget's tight, you know, to where that would hurt you. And you're going to sit there and say, I don't know how I'm going to get to work on Monday. You're never going to push it on the track.
It's
better to get a beater.
When I used to do that, I've been the guy that's done that. And when I used to do that, I would just give myself, you know, an extra quarter or extra half a brake marker going into, you know, a heavy braking zone. I'm like, well, I got to drive this thing to work tomorrow, so I'm not going to test the limits of braking today. You know,
And that impacts your driving.
Yeah.
Well, somebody also told me it's not about if, it's about when you're going to hit or get a crash or hit a wall or go off track and do damage to your car. So take those things into consideration.
But I think if you're living right, you don't necessarily have to assume it's going to happen to you in your first season or two. But
no.
You don't want to be married to something or have something that's going to ruin you financially if and when you eventually do have some bad adverse thing happen, whether it's hitting a wall or blowing an engine or whatever. The kind of stuff happens eventually with that track.
It happens.
Yeah. So
you said keep it affordable.
So if I were to respond to this person, I'd be like, hey, don't think this is your last race car. Don't put that pressure on yourself.
No. You know?
Right.
Don't try and get your dream car. Don't try and get, you know, the car that you're going to live with for the rest of your life. You know, just don't take that pressure away. Ideally, if you like the car and it's got relatively cheap consumables and it's dependable, you would want a car that you could resell to the next person when you grow out of that car. Ideally, and lose as little money as possible. That would be great. Like a spec Miata would be spectacular because you can usually get your money or most of your money back out. So that would be cool. One thing we did with our son's first car was similar to this. We ended up getting him an 86, and it was kind of the 200-ish horsepower manual transmission rear-wheel drive car. That's kind of, you know, if you were to say that generically, that's kind of a really good car to start out with. You know, Mazda Miata's kind of in that range as well. You don't want to start with 600 horsepower.
I see that a lot too. It's like, I think if you show up with something that's got that much power, I don't think you're ever going to learn to get anywhere close to driving it at the limit if that's what you start with. I mean, you're kind of always going to be shying away from that power. And I mean, there's a lot of people with plenty of experience who get out of the track. They are pretty snappy drivers, and they're still snappy, very experienced drivers who are still going to not be able to fully utilize that power.
Yeah, the
it takes
whole
a
point,
while to get there.
The whole point about being able to outgrow your car is then you can get another car. So, you know, you don't want the car to be too far ahead of you, but you definitely don't want it to be behind you. But when you're first starting, every car is ahead of you because you're really, you know, no shot. You're not that good yet.
Yeah, I doing as much instructing as I have with the Mustang Club, you know, a lot of times people would, I think I help people go a lot faster in those big horsepower cars when I'm in the seat next to them because I'm enabling them to go, yes, trust me, you can hit the gas now, we're going to be fine. And even so, you know, even some advanced drivers in with that group, this local Mustang group, you know, had heard that I was a good person to have in the right seat, so we'll get in the car with some pretty advanced drivers and just able to pick up big amounts of time when I'm in the seat with them going like, hit it, let's go. Cause they just don't know what they can get away with that much power. Right. That seems to me like they are always kind of just not anywhere near close to knowing what they can do with that power. It's fun to ride along with them. But I'm usually sitting there like, I would love to show you what this car could do right now.
Yeah. You won't understand. So yeah. Day one, I think we summarize this quickly. Day one, as long as your car is safe and won't roll over, get some good brake fluid, get ideally some good brake pads. Just go have fun. If you want a car from start to finish, don't get carried away. Don't try to get the car you're going to get married. Try and date a little bit, you know, get the a little more than the one night stand, but, you know, not the car you're going to, you know, retire with. And,
yeah, if you got 10 grand to spend, you can find a credible example of some level of prep club racing car that we've talked about, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. You can find an okay race car. Where would you look for a used race car, just in case anybody's listening that might do this? Is Racing Junk a good place to look? I mean, I got
racing,
all kinds of categories.
Racing Junk is good. You know, the various low-cost racing groups on, you know, Facebook and Instagram.
What about the forum for the exact class that I'm looking for?
That would
their internet forum.
Spectacular way.
Yeah.
That would be
yeah,
spectacular way. Yeah.
Just I mean, something to think about if you're going the built route.
There's a B-Spec Facebook group that has a sticky post at the top for all the B-Spec cars that are available nationwide.
Sweet.
You can do that. So just don't try and bite too much off the first time you get out there because a big, serious high-performance car can get you into stuff that you're not ready for.
A big car with too much power can kick your ass.
That's another way of putting it. Yes.
Yep.
So
in many ways.
Exactly. Take a small bite. Don't take the whole supermarket. So cool. All right. I think we answered that. If we didn't, right back in again, because, you know, we do these Dominator Dawsons pretty much.
Tell us what you got and what you did.
That's true. That's true. Indeed. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.